Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Now, welcome back. Convicted criminal Gerard the Monk Hutch became a huge story of the general election. He won over 3,000 first preference votes and narrowly missed out on the fourth seat in Dublin Central. The result captured the attention of the global media because, of course, Hutch is a gangland figure. Actor Rex Ryan runs the Glass Masks Theatre in Dublin and his next play is all about the monk. Good morning, Rex.
Morning. How are you?
This is a one-man show, isn't it?
It is.
Curiously, for a one-man show, it's based on Gerard Hutch's trial at the Special Criminal Court. Unusually, I would say, for a courtroom drama. Mm-hmm. People will remember he was acquitted of the murder of David Byrne at that infamous Regency Hotel shooting. What are you getting yourself in for here?
Well, the conception of this piece was that, obviously, this is one of the biggest crime stories, let's say, over the last 10 years or so. And he was a figure that I was always fascinated with. The background was that the Hutch family were residents of Clontarf and I grew up around there.
Right.
So
they were neighbours of yours.
We weren't exactly neighbours, but around the same area.
Right.
So they were known around the area. But of course, back then, as a young man, I was ignorant to any of this stuff and none of it was a big deal. I just knew them as any other family. And then as I grew up, you start to understand what the story was and the sort of mythic proportions around it. Fast forward, I run a theatre, a New Riding Theatre. We've talked about it before, Glass Mask Theatre. And by a chance encounter with a member of the family, I'd ended up talking about Gerard Hutch. And this is when the theatre was up and running. It's going brilliantly. We're doing new plays. And it was mentioned to me off the cuff that he had said it would be interesting if I had played him. This started as a joke.
Right.
And then I went off and I began to mull this possibility. And as I thought on it, Oliver, I dug into this story, I realised that not only potentially was I dealing with a fascinating character that could be portrayed in a theatrical manner that could rock people, but I also thought that this story, his story, for me, was a mirror in a way to Ireland's evolution. So if I track Gerry's beginning to Ireland's, starting with an innocent sort of pre-European country of the 70s, and then his trajectory right up to the Celtic Tiger, which had all his excesses and madness and the greed of that time, juxtaposed, I suppose, with what was happening with Ireland and contrasted, but also the similarities, I thought that I could get a strange snapshot of Ireland through one man.
It sounds like a massive stretch because immediately we're thinking, Gerard Hutch in Ireland? Like, get out of town. Absolutely no correlation. But can I take a step back, because you knew one of his children in your childhood and this was the chance encounter you had of someone you'd met, probably hadn't seen since childhood, I presume.
Yes, well, I knew all of them, as did many people around Clontarf. They were Clontarf residents, well known. And
you would have had conversations?
Sure, I knew the son. I knew the son, nice guy.
Did you ever talk about his dad with him?
So when we were younger, the fame or infamy of both our fathers was not really, we weren't too cognizant of it. It was normal to us. So that was never really a discussion. This discussion only happened when we were grown up, so to speak, and we realised what his story was.
You never talked about each other's dad, in other words, as kids?
No. It wasn't a big deal.
So was it unusual then to have this conversation 3 years ago? When you're grown up and families and so on of your own?
Well, it's a strange sort of time-travelling machine having conversations like that. And it's something, like I said, I hadn't been thinking about it until that sparked it. And then I was reticent to go anywhere near this. Very much so.
Why?
It's, well, as you've already pointed out, it's a sensitive topic, particularly given recently that the fact the man ran for office and was voted for by a relatively large number of people. It's sensitive. Many people have also been hurt, killed during a lot of things surrounding that family and other families. And I run a theatre. I was thinking, is, you know, I've a family. I was thinking, is this something I really want to get into? But then my ethos about stuff I want to create in there is that a lot of the greatest theatre I've ever seen, films, movies, books, etc., I'm sure you're the same, they provoke, they don't answer questions, they ask questions. And I thought through him, I could ask some questions that might be larger than the personal story of the man himself.
You wanted it to be uncomfortable?
I wanted to be uncomfortable. I wanted to maybe make people uncomfortable. I'd like to challenge, but I would also really enjoy entertaining. And I would also really enjoy, I suppose, the electricity and the possibility of sitting in a small room, which is our theatre, with this man who has become, for many reasons, a mythical figure. Mm-hmm. And I thought if I wrote a play that could give people a look at this man that they mightn't have gotten before, because it's my fiction. This is a fictional piece written by me.
If I could, on a real person, however.
On a real person, absolutely. And if I could give a look at him, and also a look at Ireland and why this man has become famous, so to speak, I thought it could be interesting.
Now, the first kind of port of call for your research has been going on quite some time, hasn't it? Because it's, what, the summer of 2022, and his son arranges a call between the pair of you because he's in custody awaiting trial for the Regency murder, which he's acquitted of later. But what a sensitive time to be meeting him for the first time, albeit on a video call.
Yes.
What happens in that call? How is it set up? How does it go?
Well, of course, this was bizarre for me, but not totally bizarre, because I suppose Oliver, parts that I've played over the last 8 to 10 years or so, you do research and you find yourself in dicey, strange situations, also normal situations, but you have to, for me anyway, I have to try and get an account, a real account of the topic I'm dealing with, whether that's an actor, writer, director, or in this one, all three. So this was a very strange meeting. And this happened, like I said, after reticence from me of even if I wanted to tackle this subject, could I? Can I even play the man? You know, you think about all these things. So when I did the Zoom call, I didn't really have a plan. I went in.
It's set up by the guards, I presume.
It's set up by the guards. You got 30 minutes. It's a hard stop after 30 minutes.
Right.
And all I knew was I have to talk to this man who I knew around Clontarf as a child, and I have to strangely pitch to him, to his face, as he awaits trial, that I'm going to jump around a stage and pretend to be him. And not only that, but it's my fictional version of a snapshot of his life. And that's a strange pitch to a man who's awaiting trial at the Special Criminal Court.
And people will remember he had his hair all grown out, he had a big beard, kind of hamming up the sense of his own enigma in many ways. What do you say? What's the opening couple of sentences you say to him when he appears on screen?
How are you, Jerry? How are things?
What does he say to you?
Grand. And then we ended up slipping into a conversation about Michael Mann's film Heat. De Niro, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino. We talked about Once Upon a Time in America. And what was supposed to be a pitch meeting ended up becoming a strange chat about our favourite films.
Gangster films?
Predominantly.
Does he like them? I mean, what was so strange? What does he say about these?
Well, both of us really like Heat by Michael Mann, and we discussed our favourite character in that. We enjoy Pacino, and
you're dancing around the thing that you come to talk about, and he knows what you're going to ask him.
There's 3 minutes left. I look up at the time and I realise the thing's about to cut off, and I haven't said one word about the one-man show. Mm-hmm. And I haven't talked to this man in the longest time, and also he's given me his call, which could presumably have been used for a family member or something.
Right.
So I vomit out, I think I should play you in a one-man show in my theatre. And he took a pause and then he said, you do whatever you like.
Right, so you took that as a blessing.
I ran with that. And we were clear on the parameters, and then just as we began talking again, the thing cut off.
He's cut off and then he goes off into trial. And the trial is 52 days long. The non-jury court, of course, acquits him. So he gives you the permission to write something about him.
Yes.
But he's telling you this is going to be your version of him. So obviously that's the fiction thing, isn't it?
Well, I was quite clear that it has to be my fiction because, number one, I didn't want this play. The thing, Oliver, with a play is particularly a one-person play. The form, how you do it is crucial because I didn't want to get up, sit on a chair and say, Howie, I'm Jerry Hutch. Here's my life story. That's not interesting to me. And the theatre's a great place where you can manipulate and warp time. And you can do things in the theatre that a lot of things that you might not get away with in film or television. Mm-hmm. And one of the things is jumping into someone's imagination. So I had an idea that I wanted to make a play about the inside of this man's mind that was unseen. And in order to do that, I needed it to be a fiction because of course I'm going to have to infer things about his life. I'm going to have to fill in character details that man won't tell me. Won't tell anybody. So if I was bound to anyone's point of view, whether that's Paul Williams, whether that's Nicola Tallant, whether that's Jerry Hutch, that would really box me in as a writer. Then again, you're dealing with something that is a well-known public story. A lot of it, it's public domain. So there are certain things, there are certain aspects of the story you must stay true to. So it was a tightrope, man. It's a really tricky process in the creation of the story.
After your initial phone call, you've obviously got what you consider the blessing. He's a free man. He moves off to Spain. It kind of goes by the wayside, the idea, for a bit, does it? But then you get his number from his son, I presume, and you start WhatsApping the monk?
Yes. I went off the idea. I was directing plays in Glass Mask. I was on a television series and I thought deeply about it and I thought, do I really want to open this thing up? And then one night, as cliche as this sounds, I was in the middle of a play. I watched The Godfather, turned it on to relax one night. And I thought, why do we watch these things? Why do we watch these tragedies? Mm-hmm. Why are we obsessed with these stories for thousands of years? Why do we watch the downfall of people? Why are we fascinated with criminality specifically? Why are we fascinated with rebels? The Godfather was an interesting example. It's not really a gangster story. It's a story about a father and a son. It's a story about a family. It's a story about sin, forgiveness. These are all ripe materials for storytelling, the ingredients I love particularly for the theatre. And I thought, this story, this isn't really about my ultimate fascination with Jerry Hutch. I thought, this is the raw material of a story where I could get at some major, more macro themes like the nature of fame, sin, forgiveness, media, truth. And I thought, using this man's story as a vehicle, I might be onto something.
There seems to be a lot of kind of high notions around someone like Jerry Hutch. And from his public pronouncements, as you say, you have to imagine his thoughts. Mm. Maybe there's nothing really much going on up there.
I wonder why people are fascinated by the man then. Apart from the fact he's a convicted criminal. Mm. Why are people fascinated with this man's story? And why did thousands of people vote for him? These are questions I have myself. Why and how did that man take over probably the largest proportion of publicity for the elections? What does that say about us?
Do you have any of the answers?
I have opinions, but I don't know if I have answers.
Okay.
And I think that's probably a large reason why I wrote the play.
When you get back in touch with him, are you texting him? Do you call him? What do you do when you have his number?
Well, we were in discussion. Like I said, I had to have a few sources for the play, but we were in discussion when I needed to get facts for the character. I'm not chatting to him now, and I think it's probably important that I have a removal from everybody now. Right. And I'm in rehearsals. I'm trying to make the show. So I need to just put my head down and focus on creating a piece of theatre.
Yeah.
but I think it's probably good to have removal from everybody. I should, after this interview, I should just go into a hole.
Yeah, but get back to the research, you, because you're in contact with him, aren't you? Send him voice notes?
During the writing process, yes.
Right, okay.
I'd loads of questions.
Everybody hates voice notes. How does he react to these?
Does everybody hate voice notes?
A lot of people. Imagine the kind of older generation of which he's in that group.
Well, that's a disaster because I only send voice notes.
All right, don't.
Specifically, I send 6 to 10 minute voice notes to everybody.
Go away. No one's listening to those.
Yeah, I just kept back the thumbs up sign. So I'm bombarding this man with questions to try and fill out my character.
In a voice note?
In a voice note.
Are you sending him 6 minute voice notes?
7, 8 minutes.
And how does Jerry Hutch respond to these diatribes of notes?
Concisely.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Does he send a voice note back?
No.
All right.
These are concise answers.
So he sends very short text messages back.
Well, I'm sure he'd be slightly reticent as well about giving me information. But I needed to get information that maybe hasn't been in the media. I need to get things about early life, establishing
the
character.
You're fact-checking.
That stuff.
Okay. When you've done all the voice notes and this, you still meet him in person, don't you? Is there more you need to find out?
Yeah. And also when you're playing someone, it's helpful to look them in the eye and try and get a read on the person and see what their energy is.
This is post-election or before?
Pre.
It's before the election. Okay.
Pre, yes.
Meeting him in person, and you know this guy from your childhood. He was the neighbour. He's a dad of a fella you knew growing up. He's a chief suspect, according to the Gardaí, in armed robberies. When you're meeting him face to face for the first time, and I think you're alone, aren't you?
Yeah.
Did it seem to you like a good idea?
The first one, actually, we weren't. That was in a public place. Did it seem to me a good idea? You see, I suppose you have to take me as not your normal case because of the job I do. So I'm trying to meet, and this would go for anyone that I'm trying to play. I'm trying to meet that person and be as objective as possible because I'm trying to create a story about them, a piece of theatre. So I'm trying to erase all of that extra curricular extraneous thing. I'm trying to get that out of my head and I'm trying to meet, I suppose, a man face to face and see if I can be, whatever I believe personally, I'm trying to see, like an investigative journalist maybe, I'm trying to see, can I take him exactly as I'm seen him today.
Yeah.
But then when I'm writing the play, I can go off.
I see.
And I can have my own.
So does the character you meet in person, is he deeper? Is there more depth to him in person?
He's a complicated man, for sure. And I suppose anyone who's gone through what he's gone through so publicly, that has to have had some effect on how willing you are to open yourself up to anybody. So I imagine that he is as much of a mystery to me still as...
Do you mean what he went through in terms of what do you mean by that?
Well, I suppose being in the public eye for so long, being on trial publicly, living in that world, I can only imagine that these are, in terms of your psyche, these are really taxing things, and it would be hard not to be adversely affected by that. And
you're sympathetic towards him.
Well, let's say I would be sympathetic towards many people who have gone through hurt. But what I can't do is make a judgment when I'm trying to make the play. But I suppose if someone's family were murdered and you were in that world, it's certainly something that I wouldn't wish for myself or my family. And that's something that would terrify me.
He still has a threat on his life, as he would have when you met him as well. Did he strike you as someone who was fearful?
He didn't seem fearful when I met him. But once again, I think he would have to be aware for the rest of his life.
Did you like him?
I suppose when I'm meeting him, I'm trying not to think like that. Because if I lean too far one way or the other, I'm going again to get into territory that I don't want to. So the play is me as him.
Yeah, and obviously these meetings, are you telling him what's going to happen in the play?
Yeah.
Did he ask you to change anything?
No.
Okay.
Not specifically. I sent him the script, the finished script, recently.
Right.
And there were a couple things that were factually incorrect. There were notes on that. And then there's some really challenging things in the script. Really challenging things. I mean, the whole premise of the play is that he's been taken to task.
You're saying there's parts of that would be negative for him that he didn't comment on when you sent him the script?
Yeah, I'd say so.
So when people go to see the play, what exactly are we seeing? Because he's on trial, is he? It's a kind of a courtroom drama and you've written what's going on in his mind.
It's 5 minutes before the verdict of the Special Criminal Court,
right,
which the vast majority of people already know the verdict of. It's set 5 minutes before it. He's sitting in the cell and he essentially goes into his mind in a prayer. He's often referenced the fact he was asked this on the Nicola Tallant podcast. Did he feel that there were angels watching over him because he survived so many? He survived at least two explicit attempts on his life. And he said he felt that like there was guardian angels watching over him. That stuck with me. So I took the premise of that some sort of angel visits him. As the clock ticks, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes to go to the trial. And the angel takes him to task for key moments in his life before he goes out to the judges.
When did you last have contact with him? Because you said you shut it off after your research and the writing was done.
Well, I think our business was done. I can't remember when the last one was, but it's been a good while now.
Months?
Probably.
Do you think he's going to go see the play?
I don't know. I really don't know. I know a lot of people who have been involved in this story on many sides are coming to see it. I know a lot of people in the media who are coming to see it and they'll be very interested. I don't know if he's coming.
Okay, so The Monk will be performed at the Glass Mask Theatre on Dawson Street in Dublin from the 10th of June to the 21st. Good luck, Rex Ryan. Thanks a million.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. I want to jump back to our conversation with Rex Ryan and his play on The Monk. The young playwright Ryan isn't responsible for others' actions and choices, says this texter, because there have been a couple of messages along the lines of this one, which is Rex must be hard up for inspiration for a play when he has to highlight this guy. That is a view people are expressing. But look, lots of people were surprised at the results of that general election and the big first preference vote that he got. It is something that happened in Irish society, unquestionably in the public interest, when someone runs for election and does so well, with all the questions, particularly the international reputation of the country. Undoubtedly controversial. He understands that, Rex Ryan, but it would be interesting to see what he does with it.